Hello and welcome to the second issue of About Stout, a program featuring a variety of guests to discuss issues that are important to UW-Stout. I am Doug Mell, Director of University Communications. Our main topic today is a recent report by the Academic Quality Improvement Program, or AQIP, which gave UW-Stout high marks in a number of areas. I would like to welcome Chancellor Sorensen today.
Thank you.
And our special guest, Provost and Vice Chancellor Julie Firstbovey. Thanks for joining us today. Julie, I was wondering, first of all, why don't you explain to us exactly what AQIP is?
Well, Doug, AQIP is the Academic Quality Improvement Program. It is an accreditation program that's sponsored by the Higher Learning Commission. So although we've been accredited by the Higher Learning Commission for decades, AQIP is a relatively new way to maintain that accreditation.
How does that accreditation process, which we went through, differ from what most universities do?
Well, most universities go through the traditional process where every 10 years they put together volumes of information in a self-study, and then a team of reviewers from across the country comes and pours over the information and meets with faculty and staff and generates recommendations, which largely sit on the shelf until the next 10-year visit. The AQIP process is different, really. It's based on the principles of continuous improvement. The criteria looks a lot like the Baldrige criteria. So really every year we have to demonstrate that we are actively involved in continuous improvement to maintain AQIP accreditation. So either we're working on improvement projects, we're developing an improvement portfolio, we're hosting a site visit.
Sure.
But it's an annual process as opposed to something that occurs every decade.
Why did you decide that this was the best way to go for
UW-Stout? Is based very much in the Baldrige principles of improvement. And when we decided to apply for the Baldrige way back in 1999 and then won the award in 2001, AQIP was a logical next step for us to move in that to that process.
Was it kind of a fledgling organization then?
It was. AQIP was fledgling. They worked out some of the kinks. But I want to reinforce what Julie said. I've been at three campuses, all accredited at one point by the traditional process, the 10-year process. And in all honesty, it isn't very effective because you have a tendency to put that in the shelf and pull it down about year number eight when you prepare for the 10-year evaluation.
Right.
I've been on evaluation teams where I saw schools do that, and I think this is much, much more accountable. We're accountable, I think, to our stakeholders, our students, our faculty, to Wisconsin, to the Board of Regents. This is a very, very good process, and I think that most schools probably should look at this, I think, because it's very effective. It is continuous. It's daily.
That was my next question. Isn't it, this process is more arduous on a year-to-year basis, right? I mean, because you can't just put it on the shelf and forget about it for 8 years. I mean, you really, almost on a year-to-year basis, we have to be thinking about either the next site visit or getting ready for the next site visit and that kind of stuff, or the portfolio.
Well, I think it would be for many campuses, but for us, we've got it really well integrated into our strategic planning process. So every year, we're always looking at the data, proposing new priorities. We would be doing this, the continuous improvement piece, basically with or without AQIP. So we were able to integrate the two pieces, and it's working quite well.
Do you think that the recent process that we went through, did it work pretty much the way you thought it was going to?
Yeah, I think it did. We weren't quite prepared for what to expect, but once the evaluators got here and began to talk to us and got a few misunderstandings out of the way, it went very, very smoothly. In fact, they said in the exit interview that we are our own best benchmark school.
No other school. You must have liked to hear that.
I did like to hear that because it demonstrates that we are in the forefront of using AQIP as a process for accreditation.
You talked about the team. They were really impressed in a number of areas about UW-Stout. I have some of them here, including our continuous improvement approach that you talked about that runs through the organization. They're also very impressed by the innovative use of technology, and I was wondering if either of you could talk a little bit about why you think that was important.
Let me start as a non-techie, because when I came to Stout, it was known as a high-tech school, and it was. They're doing very, very good things with technology, with gathering data, using technology to analyze that data. Lab-based, we had way back in the 88. In the 80s, we were the most lab-intensive school in the UW system. But I think now we've even taken a step beyond that. And it really began in the mid-1990s when we decided very consciously in our planning process to become a very, very high-tech school with a great infrastructure and build our technology around that. And we've done that, the laptop being the very best example of using technology in a very innovative way for learning and learning outcomes.
How are we taking that technology and transferring it to the classroom? I mean, that's obviously something you're involved in with curriculum, et cetera. I mean, how has it changed our curriculum, do you think?
Oh, dramatically.
Improved it?
Dramatically. If you look at our curriculum 5 years ago or 10 years ago, we've seen just a transformation in teaching and learning. All of our classrooms are mediated, so if you go into the classroom,
sure.
You're going to see the students and the instructors using technology actively, whether they're researching things on the internet or doing writing and editing online. We've also taken learning out of the classroom with technology. For the past several years, UW-Stout's been the leader in distance education course offerings in the UW system.
Right.
We're definitely a leader in the use of the course management system, Desire to Learn. About 80% of our courses are using that particular piece of software.
They're also impressed, and this is something that they talked about a lot in the report, about the relationship between new initiatives and budget allocation. I mean, I think it's probably putting your money where your mouth is.
Well, it is. And I think what I found out, and I know Julie has too, as we continue to visit schools with the Baldrige process, many, many schools, probably most, don't align budget with the planning process, and therefore they plan without a budget behind that plan. We changed all of that in the mid-1990s and decided that if we're going to plan action items or priorities, whatever you care to call them, we're going to fund those. And so if we can't fund a priority, it's either a priority that doesn't need funding, it's not critical to us. If it is, we fund it. And that's very unique. The alignment in this campus between planning and budget and implementation is absolutely direct. And I think that's one very impressive thing people always say about
this. Why is that important, though? I mean, why? Because it actually gets something done.
It gets something done, exactly. And it's funded. If you fund, I think priorities have to, money follows priorities, and if it doesn't, they're meaningless. And we make sure that the priorities are funded. One good example in the mid-1990s when we decided to build an infrastructure was a network. We decided in July of 1997 to fund a first-rate network, a Cisco network. We had no pot of money. We sat around in July of 97. See, how do we do this? We glommed together an idea for money. We had that installed by January of 1998. 6 months in higher ed is rapid pace, believe
yes.
me. And we achieved that. So that's the importance of having priorities that are funded.
Another thing they were really impressed with was the planning process, which you talked about, and obviously you've As a person who kind of shepherded our Baldrige Award, you're very well aware of that. Can you talk a little bit about how the planning process has been translated from the Baldrige Award to something that we have made systemic in the institution?
Oh, definitely. Our strategic planning process, again, compared to most campuses, it's very comprehensive. It's extremely participatory. As the Chancellor said, the early beginnings date back a decade ago for, you know, making the network a priority and how are we going to do that. Well, we started really formalizing that process. So now it's an annual process where each year the strategic planning group, which is a wide group of faculty, staff, students, administrators, comes together, looks at the past year's progress, looks at our enduring goals, our Focus 2010 goals. What do we need to take the campus forward in the short term and the long term? We draft priorities. We take those priorities out to the campus in the fall, probably a series of 8 to 12 listening sessions. The chancellor's at every one of the sessions. I'm at every one of the sessions, as are the deans. We talk about the priorities. Is this on track? Is this what you want to see happen? Do you have other ideas? And as the chancellor just mentioned, when we've gotten the input from everyone and decided these are the four or five things we really want to move on this year, we attach resources, budget, people, timelines, again, action plans to make sure that those things are indeed accomplished in the desired time frame.
Is that kind of inclusive kind of priority setting normal on campuses? Or,
I don't think it is. I think I've been again three schools, and even when I came here, the process normally was department to dean to the provost to the cabinet, and the president makes the decision, and that was a process we followed at UW-South until the mid 1990s. Grand Valley did that in Michigan, where I was. Winona State did that. And therefore, the amount of input that you have is much more limited. If people don't care to attend these sessions, they don't, and some don't, and we have our critics of this process. But truly, it's much, much more inclusive and democratic than anyone I've ever seen in higher education.
Does it make getting things done easier, too? Because there's before a decision's been made, there's been so much discussion about an issue. It isn't like you're... you just drop it on someone that by the time that it comes around to implementing it, it's been talked about thoroughly.
Oh, there's buy-in on the ideas. The action planning part is very important because it isn't just an idea floating out there. It's been assigned to a person or department. They've got budget, they've got a timeline, they've got expected outcomes, and every 6 months their group gets back together to look at progress, so there isn't any way of anything really slipping between the cracks.
Another thing that they were talked about, and I can attest because I've seen a lot of this, is the fact that UW-Stout is data-driven. We don't do things, on a wing and a prayer here. We have data. Why is that important?
Well, very historic here at Stout. When I was nominated for this position and I got the materials for this position, I was absolutely awestruck by the amount of data given me to review in preparation for the interview. And so we've always been data-driven, and I think that it allows for a much better analysis, a more independent analysis than simply intuition. And we have maintained that. This dates back, I'll bet it dates back 30 or 40 years, quite frankly. And for us now, it's commonplace. We look at data virtually every time we meet as a leadership group. We look at good data, bad data. I want negative trends as well as positive trends. And for us, it's just a tool that we use all the time that leads toward good decision-making.
And without that data, the Baldrige wouldn't have been possible, right? I mean, you had to use the data as part of our submission, correct?
Oh, truly. The Baldrige, your application is scored on a scale of 0 to 100, and part of it is your processes, the things that we've described, how you get your work done at an institution, but a bigger part of it is really showing the results that you were able to accomplish what you said you were going to accomplish and actually prove such an area of, graduation rates or student job placement rates, that you have the data, that the data is improving over time, and that the data compares very favorably to other institutions nationwide.
Yeah, I would just add that many schools, and I've done, I'm sure myself, will leap out and say, we are known nationally for this program or whatever. But quite frankly, most schools aren't. They're pretty regional, they're pretty local, they're pretty state-bound. But when you have the Baldrige, you have to demonstrate over time that you are best practices. You have to go out and measure yourself against schools nationwide, not just say we're good, but demonstrate that you compete against good California schools or New York schools or Texas schools, and have the data to show that. And we've done that. Our peer group is about 25 different schools.
Which we've changed
in the last year. Which we've changed to polytechnics now. But even before that, Doug, when we were out there with the Baldrige, some of the schools that we chose for our peer groups that were different were polytechnics,
sure,
because they had the same program array that we did. So I think the beauty of it is you simply can't say you're good. Now you have to prove you're good. And the data has to show that in black and white. That's very hard to do for a lot of schools.
One of the initiatives you've been involved in, Julie, is the curriculum development process, which is new on campus, the formalized process. Can you talk a little bit about how that works?
Well, we always had a very traditional curriculum development process, like many of the schools, where ideas went from the faculty member to the department, to the college, up to the university. A couple of years ago, basically at the request of some of our newer faculty members, we were sort of told to turn it around. What they really wanted to do was to not just work inside of their disciplines or their departments, but to work with people across campus on some of these emerging curricular areas, such as neuropsychology or nanotechnology, things that really require the sciences to work with psychology, to work with mathematicians, computer scientists, and it's been really exciting.
To kind of break down the silos.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So the last 2 years, we've been able to come up with funding through our budget process to fund teams of faculty that are now putting together some really exciting interdisciplinary proposals.
And we're about ready to see the fruits of some
Definitely.
Of that. I mean, some programs have already been approved by the Board of Regents. Can you talk about those?
Certainly. We've had two new engineering programs, a polymer engineering program and a computer electrical engineering program, go through the first stage of Regent approval.
Something very important in this area, given our plastics industries, mm-hmm. given our computer technology industries. I mean, I'm sure it's something that business people have been asking for.
We'll have a new degree in science education going forth before the board this year. Again, a growing area and a nice collaboration between our science faculty and our teacher education faculty. And then we're doing something that actually UW System just commended us on, and that's a new degree for individuals that want to be certified in both science and technology education. A good, nice fit for Stout, a nice complement to the Polytechnic.
And also
as well.
A national effort to increase
that's
the number
right.
of
mm-hmm.
teachers that we have in that area.
And mm-hmm. I want to return to the incubation center just for one moment because funded that. We found $100,000 two summers ago to fund 8 different teams to work over the summer, look at that collaboration. This summer it was more like $50,000, but we're the only school in the UW, and I would guess one of the few schools in the country, that have an incubation center as an incentive for faculty to cross lines, get together, use their creative thinking powers, and come up with brand new ideas for new program development. I'm proud of that. We should all be proud of that because it shows a commitment to what we do here. We teach. And I think that's we require excellence in that.
This summer, I've found, is sort of the culmination of the planning process that we'll see the results of in the fall. Can you either one of you talk a little bit about the retreat and how that works?
Well, I'll start, and Judy mm-hmm. can wind it up. But we gather the planning group on campus, plus about, I don't know, 15 other faculty. So we have 40 people roughly, I suppose. And we prepare for it with 3 pre-retreat sessions to review all of our data, all of what we have done in the past, where we're going, what the proposals may be for the future. And we sit there in a very facilitated setting and talk about those for 2 full days. And normally, it'll be a little bit different this year, normally come up with 2 or 3 action items we want to bring back to campus.
Do you think it works well? I mean, do you think the process, I mean, is it too much talking, or do you really see results from it, do you think?
Oh, no. Each year we do end up with a set of new initiatives to bring forward to the campus. We try to close out on the previous set of initiatives so we don't have too many different things going on. I think it really helps the campus. What I think is we're more cohesive than other campuses when it comes to knowing what the goals are, knowing what the priorities are, having everyone be on the same page as opposed to everyone sort of working off their individual agendas to try to get things done.
I think that we're much more transparent than most schools. We recently interviewed someone for a pretty high-level position on campus, and they came from a private school over in Minnesota. And they were amazed how transparent we are in our budget, how we spend money, where we spend it, our planning process, the inclusivity. He's from a very good private school and was simply astounded by the transparency of processes here at Stout.
It seems that some of these processes at least must be working. We have a recent survey, which I know you've all seen, of recent graduates that showed more than 3/4 of undergraduate alumni said their programs are very effective, either highly effective or effective, and more than 2/3 said the value of their education was good or exceptional. Both of you must be heartened by that kind of results, because that shows that what we're doing is what people want.
Well, we both are. I know that. And last fall, about a year ago right now, I think, we visited about 10 or 15 industries around the Chippewa Valley. We heard that time and time and time again. It was repeated at every stop that we made. We are presently involved with Spectrum Industries on a very exciting science project to build a workstation for those who have a certain kind of handicaps. I mean, this,
which we got a federal grant for.
A federal grant, for NSF grant for that through Madison. So we are a school that actually does provide value added for our students who go out into the workforce and adds value to those companies and thus society.
Why do you think alumni? I mean, I met with alumni, her kids coming here to school. I mean, we seem to have generation after generation coming to Stahl. Why do you think that is?
I think our alumni base is extremely loyal. I think they're very proud of Stahl. They've had a good experience here, both in and out of the classroom. As the chancellor mentioned, they're able to get very good jobs and move up in their companies. And I think they like to keep the connection, whether it's through taking graduate courses or coming back for activities or sending their own kids here to school. It's definitely a very loyal alumni base. I think more like you would see at a private institution than just any other public university.
One of the developments you talked about earlier, Julie, is something I'd like to talk about a little bit. It's the effort here to put our courses online. And in fact, starting in the fall, we're going to put the entire golf course and enterprise management program online in the fall, which is a really big development. The entire course is going to be. Do you see more and more UW-Stahl courses and or programs going online? How do you think that's going to affect campus?
Well, it's definitely happened over the past 10 years or so. We've put a number of our both undergraduate and graduate programs online. And for this part, it's been very good for the campus. So we're able to reach students we wouldn't be reaching. We have a master's degree in vocational rehabilitation online, which is attracting practitioners basically worldwide. The same thing with the professional development program for educators. For the traditional students, certainly most of them, I think, still prefer to come to class, live in the residence hall, have that college experience. But what we're finding is the online appeals to them as well. They're tech savvy. This summer, the campus will look quiet, even though our enrollments are actually up, because so many of our course offerings are online. I think our College of Arts and Sciences has 90% of their course offerings online.
Wow.
And that's really attractive to students, whether they're on campus, off campus, out working somewhere. It's very convenient.
Is that the wave of the future, do you think?
Well, I think we're seeing the future right now, the tip of it, of the iceberg here. I think that we're undergoing a real revolution in higher education. Look at the online universities out there right now, the virtuals, the for-profits, the privates, and we have tough competition, and therefore we keep adjusting to that competition. But this is the future. Higher ed is undergoing dramatic change right now.
It must be kind of heartwarming. I've been walking around campus the last couple of weeks, and it's orientation time for new students to actually see the...
For very young students.
the new freshmen are coming through, too.
And
it must be heartwarming to see the new crop of freshmen walking around.
They are young, yes. But it is heartening because this is the new generation. These are the leaders of the next 20 years for our society.
Yeah.
And they're good. They're different than when I was in school or you were in school or probably even Julie, but they're different. But they are tech savvy. They know what they want. They want it now. They want the resources now. And I think it's very exciting. These are bright, bright young people we're getting. Bright, sometimes a different way than we were, but extremely bright.
And we've done so many things the last few years to try to make that first year a great experience for them. We've got the first year experience in place. We have learning communities. We've centralized advisement. We've blocked, scheduled them so they really know they're going to get a full schedule of classes they need for the fall. We've done things with the math and the math lab and the English and the English lab, all designed to give them a really good start that first year.
Good. Anything else you folks would like to talk about?
Well, I think we have a good year coming up, exciting year. I think we're going to focus sharply on our new mission, on our new designation, and I look forward to a very rewarding year.
Thank you, Doug.
Thanks. I'd like to thank both the Chancellor and the Provost
today
for joining us. I think it's been very informative, and I hope that you'll join us next month for another edition of About Stout. Goodbye for now.